Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger fuel centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8-6-25 and 1-5-26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointsTC.
Good evening, everybody. How's it going? This is Tyler Dunn here with Bob McGinn at the McGinn Compound Headquarters Mothership. Bob, what's going on?
Actually, it's morning, Tyler, right? So we're taping this in the morning.
I say afternoon, evening. I don't know when people are going to listen to this. I'm not quite sure how to phrase that one.
You're like one of those TV announcers who broadcast games at night and they play one in the afternoon and they say night or whatever.
You know? Something like that. Something like that. So you're wearing a Michigan hoodie there.
Yeah.
They took one to the chin against the Spartans.
Tuesday night at the Breslin Center. I was jacked. I thought they could rebound after their tough loss to the Badgers.
First, can you talk about how you watch sports games, sports events?
Almost everything I watch, whether it be major golf or Big Ten basketball, the things I kind of like apart from the job, I tape stuff. And then, so I never watch a commercial. I maintain a news blackout during the day or whatever.
But how do you do this news blackout? How is this possible? I can't
understand. Well, when I'm off, I just don't look at anything, you know?
So
you got
no Twitter, no TV, no radio, no internet.
Try not to. And then
your son, they know, your whole family knows not to tell you what happened.
Basically. And so Tuesday night, I'm watching that Spartan game. And I got my remote. Turn the sound off. And watch it. And it wasn't good, Tyler.
It was not pretty.
And I knew it was over after about 15 minutes late in the first half. But when you watch these games like that, you know, you got a remote and somebody gets a layup, you can go back. Instant replay. You can go back at your own. You can see who screwed up on defense. And about 9 times out of 10, it's been Glenn Robinson with every problem for the Wolverine defense. He is as soft as anything you can imagine.
Pretty bad then. Pretty bad. The son of
Charmin.
The son of Glenn Robinson, they know around these parts, right?
I mean, they had some seniors last year, Zach Novak and Stu Douglas.
Okay.
Who were limited in talent but would get after it every single night. And this team just doesn't play hard. I mean, I don't know. They're hurting, and I'm kind of sworn them off now for a couple weeks.
I mean, we sat here earlier in the year, and you were high on these guys. You went down the roster player by player, and now you're not quite sure if they're even a contender.
You know, I saw them do all those good things against bad clubs, but when you get against Indiana and Michigan State and Wisconsin and Ohio State, teams that can play D and get after you, and all this open court stuff just goes away.
Yeah.
That's meaningless, and you got to have people who can play by possession, you know?
Absolutely. Well, I'm sorry, Bob. Sorry about your loss. That's a tough one.
It's a real tough one.
Plus, your wife has Michigan State ties, so.
She's a grad. She's good about it. She doesn't care. The Blue had beaten the Izzos 3 of the last 4 games, though, in the last 2 years. They were 3-1 against them.
Good point.
But they have not won at the Breslin Center in ages, and they haven't won at the Kohl Center in ages. So,
man, well, we'll see. It's a long season. A lot to get into today, Bob.
Do you want to talk about your Syracuse basketball here as an aside?
Yeah, you know what, though? Orange? Like, I don't have that kind of allegiance that you have. Yeah. I think because I just covered the team and was around them in that capacity. It's not that pom-pom waving alum myself. Sorry.
It's interesting. You know, I can't cheer in anything in football, you know. I mean, but it is kind of fun to be a fan in like one little thing in my life.
Well, I hear you. Buffalo Sabres, the hockey team.
All right, your brother.
My brother works for the team. Yeah. So, you know, get that perspective.
And one other thing I'll mention. My high school closed the year after I got out. you know.
That's right.
Catholic school in Escanaba, Michigan. It closed. I mean, I would have been, you know, following that program for my entire life, and that was quite a blow. So you still have your high school.
Yes. Oh, yeah. All graduated 48 kids, I think, my senior class, and it's around there still, but they're still in operation, and yeah, chugging along.
Yep.
Not a lot of kids there, but boy, we got a lot to talk about for an off-season podcast. Busy day yesterday, Charles Woodson released by the Packers. Not a surprising move, but a move that definitely has a lot of layers to it. We'll get into that. JerMichael Finley, he said it's 50-50 whether he'll be back. That's another big off-season decision for Ted Thompson and the Packers to make. We'll get into the combine a little bit. This guy sitting to my right, he's been going to this thing since 1947.
Stop.
When check. Was the first year you went?
I guess around
93. That's so now it's just such a huge event. So we'll kind of go back into the time machine and talk about that a little bit. We'll talk about a few players that we're going to be keeping an eye on. We'll both be down there at Indy. And then you also sent some questions on Twitter. So lots to get into. First and foremost, Bob, Charles Woodson, you went back and you looked at the grades that you've been giving him year by year. And can you just kind of take us through his career with the Packers? I guess we'll start off there.
Sure. 7 years. You know, really nobody wanted him when he left Oakland. I mean, he hadn't played that well. It was kind of surprising to me that the Packers gave him all that much money. I think it happened on April 2nd of 06. He had been out on the street for, you know, in UFA for 6 weeks, something like that. They were like bidding against themselves. I didn't understand the size of the contract. And then that first training camp, I mean, there was twice in front of us at training camp that August in which Mike McCarthy and Woodson met off to the side after practice, mid-August, early August, and they weren't seeing eye to eye at all. His practice habits weren't good. I thought he wasn't playing well, Tyler. This is a lot different player than we saw later on. In exhibition games, I remember a scout who saw that Bengal game. I think it was maybe the third exhibition when you try to put your, you know, cards on the table that first summer. He was terrible.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, he got beat like a drum in that first half. So nobody knew where this thing was headed.
And just to backtrack to that offseason, they obviously had money to spend. And weren't they also considering LeVar Arrington?
Yes.
I mean, that was a possibility, too. You can go in two very different directions here, and they end up with Woodson. I think they missed out on Arrington. He signed with the Giants.
I think you're right. And then they had the money, and then they went to Woodson.
Right.
You're right. Good call on that.
But, yeah, nobody wanted the guy. It was kind of temperamental, and he didn't really want to be here.
No, he didn't. And he's admitted that later on in interviews, you know. And he also, I think McCarthy and him had to come to a meeting of the minds and not practice him so hard, give him some time off, you know. A trust factor that, hey, you trust me and I'll have your back and I'll be ready on every Sunday, right? And that's the way it broke down. And, you know, he played hurt. He missed a lot of practice time, but McCarthy trusted him. He was always there on Sundays, and that's the way his career went. So when you just, I went back and I looked at the grades, you know, sometimes you talk about a player and you kind of, you just speak in generalities, but I just kind of went back and looked at it. He got a B+ that first year. I wrote he had 4 extraordinary interceptions, 12 turnovers. It was the most since Leroy Butler had 12 in 93. Mm-hmm. Played with a bum shoulder. He was a punt returner that whole year.
That's right.
You know? So, shall we go through this a little bit?
Yeah,
You chime in whenever you want here.
All right, take us on through.
All right. 2007, he had an A-. He played cornerback by feel, not by technique. He guessed more right than wrong. He played hurt for the second straight year. I said he sold out his body all the time. A-. All right, we go to 08. Favre's gone. He becomes more of a leader. He got an A on this one. 7 interceptions, return him for 169. 6 of those picks were with spectacular individual effort. Best year by a cornerback in many, many years. You know, I went back. The corner that I remember the most was Mark Lee for having a great year that was unrecognized. And I believe that was in 1987. Mark Lee, I think, had 9 picks that year. And about 7 of them were great plays, not just, you know, cheapos. And that was kind of the cornerback season of Green Bay that I had used as the standard for 20 years. But Woodson was right there with this one.
And that would have been Bob Sanders. That's the year he got fired, too. They were 6-10. I mean, they had a lot of collapses on defense in that's a way, right. too. Mm-hmm. But he had a great year.
Yeah. He fractured his toe in the opener. Wasn't able to practice fully until November 5. Took pain-killing shots for a month to play. Threw his body around and challenged almost every route. He had a big year. He truly, that was his best year to that point. Now in 09, I gave him another A. He took some leading wide receivers and tight ends right out of the game. He had 9 picks. Half of them were tremendous efforts again. 5 forced fumbles. He had 15 turnover plays. Jeez. That's 3 more than any Packer in more than 20 years. Creative, rugged blitzer and an inspiration to the team.
Defense player of the year.
In 09, right?
Yeah.
Okay. 2010, I gave him a B+. He brought a serious demeanor to the locker room. I don't know what you call it. Remember he was doing the handshakes at that point? Mm-mm. He'd make a play or somebody would make a play and Woodson would go out there with a basic hard handshake. It was just so weird, you know? But that's kind of what he wanted to the cast in that locker room. Played in the slot 75% of the time here now. There was no one better. He played it recklessly as a raw rookie. Joe Witt that season in 2010 asked him to take fewer chances. He only had 2 picks. Now, this is when he started to be on the ground too much. He would lose his legs at the ball. He'd fall down. That became a real problem, you know. He had 12 penalties, number one on the team. He had 20 missed tackles. So there were signs of slippage in 2010. Okay. They won the Super Bowl.
Won the Super Bowl. Obviously, gave that speech after the NFC Championship game.
Right.
Kind of. So these past couple years, you're talking 08, 09, 2010, he really kind of took on that leadership role that everybody talks about.
All right, 2011, he's playing in the slot full-time, his last year at corner. Declining athleticism. He was playing too many hunches, I thought. 7 picks, however. 18 missed tackles. I gave him a B. All right, this year they moved him to safety. He got hurt in midseason, another broken collarbone. I mean, he really couldn't cover outside at all anymore. He struggled covering inside in his 9 games, you know. He played safety. I wrote his freelancing compromised the defense too much at safety. You know about that. You talked to Darren Perry. I thought he was a bit of a negative influence on some young players this season. And he only had 2 takeaways. I gave him a C.
So on the field, I mean, we're talking about one of the best playmakers in the team's history, declining speed, skills, and really that move to from corner to safety. You just can't freelance and trust your hunches, and he can't do what he does great there at that price tag. I mean, let's get into the finances of this decision a little bit. 6.5 base, 2.5 bonus, and another million on top of that if he played all 16 games, you know, a per game basis. So the guys do a lot of money. I mean, and you wrote about it after the season and pretty much said the Packers would be crazy to keep this guy, even at that price. Could, you know, talk about that comment a little bit and how you came to that.
This decision is one of the best Ted Thompson's ever made. Just get it done with. It gives Woodson, it's a humane thing to do. It gives him all offseason now to get a job.
It's true.
You know? I mean, really, he's doing him a favor. He's doing the franchise a favor. Personally, I mean, I wouldn't have had him back at any price. You just got to force yourself to get better. And this, he just wasn't a player anymore. And it's only going to get worse. The collarbone, the money is just outrageous for what his contributions are. So they're going to have to draft one or sign one, and they're going to have to do some things.
And talking to his agent, it sounds like a pay cut. Never was a real serious possibility either. That's what the Packers did, is they just moved on entirely and didn't really consider that. You have to wonder, I mean, you bring Charles Woodson back. Is that much of an upgrade at safety over a 23, 24-year-old and Jerome McMillan, M.D. Jennings, if they bring a rookie in? Like you said, they're going to go. This is a young team that's getting younger, and they're going to try to force themselves to get better at that spot.
I'm sure the Packers were hoping he'd retire.
Right.
They could have had a big bash. They could have done it up right however they wanted to do it, you know.
Yeah.
But Woodson wants to play, and I don't know how much money he's going to make, you know.
What's the best situation for him? I mean, is it back at a slot corner position? Is it staying at safety? Because really, he, like you kind of alluded there, he got away with some Woodsonisms in this defense. I mean, he had freedom. He had the green light to kind of do what he wanted to do because the coaches trusted him. They knew he was watching a ton of film and that those decisions had some substance to it. But is another team going to kind of give him that freedom somewhere else?
It may not happen until after the draft. It's possible. You know, his resume at safety is so thin. His speed is declining. You take a player like this, I mean, the Packers put up with a lot. I mean, he took a lot of chances. He's a lot like Troy Polamalu. Mm-hmm. And with chances come mistakes, and it comes, you know, hurting the integrity of your defense. I mean, this happens a lot. And a lot of, you know, fans would give Woodson the benefit of the doubt because they didn't understand where these breakdowns were occurring. But a lot of them were because he was just doing things, and he had other guys in that secondary covering for him.
I remember Devon House telling me during training camp that coaches basically told him, you know, don't do what Wood does. You know, he's kind of has his own set, his own rules there. But, you know, up until a couple of years ago, you kind of reeled off all the turnovers he's forced. It paid off for him and the Packers.
I mean, I didn't mention in here, Tyler, I mean, each year, you know, I charted responsibility for touchdown passes and for 20 plays of 20 yards or more. And his numbers were on the high end year after year, 8, 9, 10 on the 20-plus, 3, 4, 5, 6 touchdowns, passes somewhere in there, you know. I mean, there's a lot of things they lived through and put up with. Mm-hmm. But they did it for the turnovers. He was a very rugged player. He was a heck of a blitzer in his early years. I don't think he is now. So I don't know who's going to take that on. I don't know. You know, it was interesting. Aaron Rodgers on his radio show about a week after the season, something like that. I mean, he said that Woodson needed to be back and it should be one of the team's top priorities to bring back Charles Woodson. He didn't talk about at what price, but, you know, and he said, I don't think you can get better by taking from the hole, taking away a core guy. And I think he is a core guy. I mean, that put a lot of pressure on the front office, Ted Thompson, Mike McCarthy, and Mark Murphy to make this decision. I mean, they made it now a month after, so Rodgers' words are forgotten. But, I mean, anybody who really understands what was going on know you cannot. Woodson was no longer a core player. He's not a $10 million player, and you've got to move on. And I thought Rodgers, with those words, usually he's pretty wise with his statements. Mm-hmm. But that one was pretty much out in left field.
So, Bob, do you think that Ted Thompson, Mike McCarthy, and the Packers listen to Aaron Rodgers and take his words into the decision-making process with something like this?
I don't think they put any more stock in what he says than what Brett Favre says during his career. I just don't. You can't do that. I mean, Rodgers also said, he said, I think Woodson is really playing at a really high level. I mean, come on. It's just foolishness. And, you know, Favre used to say some things at press conferences that had me just shaking my head. He would talk about teammates, and this was the greatest collection of talent he'd ever been associated with. He was saying that in like 04 and 05, completely forgetting about these Super Bowl teams in 90. Come on. So, no, you know, you don't want Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers being your GM. And
now, you can remember a couple years ago when James Jones was a free agent. I could be wrong, but I think he spoke up then and was kind of lobbying for James Jones's return. That worked out pretty well. Very different situation, but... If you're Mike McCarthy or Ted Thompson, do you listen to your quarterback? Does that have any factor at all? You're saying no.
I wouldn't. I mean, Rodgers knows these guys as players, as mm-hmm. friends, you know. But it's not a friend type business.
Yeah.
This is cutthroat, and this is all about it's money and about performance. And, I mean, players, you ask players on the Packers – oftentimes we have to do this on stories when assistant coaches aren't available, right, Tyler? You have to talk to Joe Blow about his teammate across the way or across the line. And you're going to get a one-sided comment usually, you know. And it's the same here. I mean, you're just not going to get the truth from players discussing teammates. And if you're in a front office position or a coaching position, you got to disregard all that
stuff.
It's just talk.
And so you're calling this one of Ted Thompson's best decisions?
Absolutely. Yep, absolutely. This is the right call. You plunge forward. And you make yourself get better. I mean, the guy is, he's over the hill. Yeah. And that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
And he's got a bad collar. But regardless of the money or anything, I just don't think he can play anymore. So,
do you think that they can go ahead with MD Jennings and McMillan at safety and Sean Richardson? Just to turn the page on this, what does the safety position look like in the future? I think you noted in your grades. I know Morgan Burnett was one of two players in the entire NFL that played every defensive snap. So you know what you're going to get out of him. Now you have some question marks at the other spot.
Jennings and McMillan both played about 600 snaps. I'd like to see more, wouldn't you?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, Jennings is a pretty smart guy. McMillan, I think he's a pretty smart guy. For a rookie from Maine, I thought he handled the system well. He's a little shorter than what you want, but he's got some toughness. They can both develop. I think, you know, we haven't seen the best out of them. Richardson, we don't know with the injury. They've got to get somebody else in there to compete. You can't enter a camp with that three- or four-man group. It's got to be a draft pick from a really good group of safeties. You could see some at the Senior Bowl, and there's a bunch of juniors now coming out that have declared, or you sign a vet.
Could that be a possibility? I mean, Charles Woodson kind of went against the Ted Thompson school of thought there when they signed him. Could this be an offseason where maybe they go out and they pursue a Jarius Byrd or somebody of that caliber?
Could be. Or I mean, we don't know what that crop's going to look like after the re-signings and the cap sacrifices here in the next month. But absolutely, it could be.
I'm really interested to see if McMillan takes a step, too, because he's one player on that defense that, you know, wants to take your head off, and you have to think that's what they need.
Not a bad player, you know, Tyler? Yeah.
Right. All right. Well, let's talk a little JerMichael Finley, Bob. Another decision for Ted Thompson to make. Now they free up, what, $10 million with the Charles Woodson decision. JerMichael Finley, he's due a lot of money himself. Talking to him last week, he says it's 50-50. He's not sure if he's going to be back. How do you kind of see the situation? And I guess the timetable here, they don't necessarily have to do something right now, but they're going to have to make a decision on this guy fairly soon.
That roster bonus is due, I forget.
In March. He's due $3 million in March, and he's got a figure of $8.25 million. That's a lot of money even for 1 year.
I think it was the fifth day of the league year maybe, which would be maybe March 17, something like that. How did Finley sound? I mean, I remember you said he thought it was 50-50. Did he seem at peace with it?
He did. He seems like he's at peace with it. And, you know, he believes he finished strong, left a good lasting impression. And he did. You know, I think that he kind of proved that he's got a place in the offense, even with James Jones, Jordy Nelson, Randall Cobb. Obviously, the offense kind of orbited around those three receivers, but Finley finished strong. Aaron Rodgers decided to go back to him. Obviously, he after the drops early in the year, kind of went away from Finley. And it's kind of funny. I guess he's most catches for a Packers tight end in history, and it was really a down year for the guy. I think the problem, if you're Ted Thompson, you let this guy go. He's 25, 26 years old, still very young. He's, 6'5", 247. There's just not many tight ends built like JerMichael Finley that, you know, he's got a lot of potential. Just what's the timetable for letting that potential to grow? I mean, has he had enough time here, or do they decide to turn the page?
It's why they're getting paid the big bucks, you know. Ted Thompson, Russ Ball, and Mike McCarthy. I firmly believe that he changed some minds out there. I mean, he was gone. They had made that decision to move on, whether trade or release. But the guy rallied down the stretch, and he was a good tight end the last 8 to 10 weeks. He was consistent. He didn't block worth a darn. That's really on the negative side of the ledger. He blocked poorly in the run game, worse than I've ever seen him when you count the numbers up. So, you know, it's a position where you got Andrew Corliss coming off. Now he's 2 years away from an ACL. He will be. And I like him as a blocker. You remember him as a blocker. Mm-hmm. I really like the way he came on. DJ Williams.
Hasn't really had a chance yet.
Not really.
Two great training camps, and they never really gave him a shot.
He had one bad drop against Jacksonville, I think, that kind of sticks in your mind. You got Tom Crabtree and Ryan Taylor could fill out a roster. It's not a real good year in the draft at the position. It's a lot of money for Finley. I don't know. They know best how much they're going to need for Rodgers, Matthews, and Raji.
a pay cut could be a possibility. Also hearing that if they wanted to keep the guy around, they could always restructure to multiple years and give him an extension that's a little more cap-friendly in the short term. You know, probably in my interview with Finley, the most interesting thing, the thing that stood out to me was, like, you know, very honest, open. He said that the outside criticism from fans really did kind of get to him early in the season, and that he'd be out in town and people are telling him, hey, don't drop your keys. And I think that kind of hurt his psyche a little bit early on. And he met with Mike McCarthy, talked to coaches, and kind of worked through that. And he didn't have the drops late in the season. So that's a whole other dynamic here is, you know, he's one of the most polarizing players on the team. A lot of fans don't like this guy. And he kind of had to work through that.
You know, I wrote that Ruffs column on him on the day of whatever, I think mid-December, December 15, something like that. Okay. He talked to me once or twice about it. But again, the guy, I think he knew there was mostly a lot of truth in there. And he played beyond it, didn't he?
Mm-hmm. He did.
He didn't care about me. He wasn't showing me, but he showed everybody. And I love the way he responded to all this voices out there calling for his head. And he played. He didn't block, but he certainly was consistent, and he cut back on his penalties. So, I don't know.
I'll say this, too. All right, so he'll make a big catch, and he gets up, and he does his little Finn celebration.
First down
signal and all that, and that usually drives people in Wisconsin kind of nuts sometimes. You can see it on Twitter. But then you got Rob Gronkowski out in Vegas, shirtless, broken forearm, body slamming guys. We've talked about it on this podcast a lot. Is it that detrimental what JerMichael Finley says and does in Green Bay in the grand scheme of things?
Well, Tyler, let's have you answer your own question. You have strong thoughts on that, so how do you see it?
I don't think it's that big of a deal. You know, obviously his comments about Aaron Rodgers created a big stir, and he probably shouldn't have said some of those things. I'm sure he regretted it right after that. Had a big game against Detroit, and the relationship kind of improved from there. I don't know. I think that he has been immature at times. He's admitted as such, and he's honest to a fault, open to a fault, and that can get him into trouble. But, Bob, I don't think the Packers should really hold that against him. I mean, give me a break. There's worse criminals out there than somebody who speaks his mind in the locker room and isn't afraid to be honest. He kind of cuts against the grain in that matter, and if the Packers really use that as a factor in this decision-making process, I think they're making a mistake.
I agree. It's about what goes on in the white lines. The guy is not a criminal, you know. I mean, yeah, he does some crazy things. There's no doubt about it. And maybe he speaks out of turn. He also brings some life in that room. And it's what it is between the lines, man.
Right, exactly. And between the lines, like you wrote in your column toward the end of the season, he was struggling. Wasn't blocking well. Dropping a lot of passes. He was kind of phased out. But he responded, he finished strong, and if you think that he can capitalize on that in the future, you hang on to him at that price for one more season.
Let's look back. I gave him a C+, Tyler, on the grades. He dropped 5 passes, and he lost a fumble in the first 5 games. Then he bounced back. He had just 1 drop and no fumbles after that. So in the last, how many did he play? 18 games this year? So in the last 13 games, he had 1 drop, no fumbles. What's the issue? You know, he finishes with 6. Did his best work in the flat. Possesses good, not great speed and fine athleticism. Degree of stiffness hurts him after the catch. And on some routes, is a split receiver. I mean, that's true. Played 769 snaps. Played mostly half and half, conventional wide receiver or split. Regressed as a blocker, allowed 9.5 bad runs after having just 6 in his first 4 seasons. That's jarring. And he's owed a $3 million roster bonus. So it's a tough call. I'm glad I'm not making it.
As a pass catcher, can they afford to lose him? There's a good chance they're going to lose Greg Jennings in free agency. If you lose Finley, I mean, those are three guys with Donald Driver who've been very productive for him last decade.
All right, so if Jennings and Finley are gone, then you got on the outside, you got Nelson and Jones, you got Cobb in the slot, you got the revolving door of tight ends, you got Jeremy Ross working his way in with Boykin.
They like Boykin a lot. I think he's going to get a decent shot.
And I think they like Ross a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So And they're going to draft somebody.
True.
They'll pick one up.
So maybe they can survive, but at the tight end position, there's, you mentioned those other guys. You just don't know what you have in Andrew Corliss coming off of that injury and sitting out for so long. Tom Crabtree's valuable to the offense and his role, but as far as a dynamic threat, there's nobody else really next in line.
DJ.
You think so?
I don't know. I believe in Corliss.
I like DJ Williams too, but he just really hasn't gotten a lot of looks in game action on Sundays. You just haven't seen him. He's looked great in practice. He's had two really good training camps.
He's short. He's got the 6'2" working against him. Corliss has got the great body. Corliss was a good receiver at Penn State. He's going to be 20 months removed from the ACL when training camp opens. They're going to run the ball better with Corliss and Finley.
Good point. What do you say? Want to move on, Bob?
Sure.
Okay. The NFL scouting combine. Going to be trucking down to Indianapolis next week. And when we get down there, it's going to be swarming, Bob. There's going to be swarming with writers, with prospects, with scouts, with...
All right, it is. So, Tyler, you were there last year for the first time?
Correct, yeah.
Okay, so why don't you describe the scene at Lucas Oil Stadium where the media is headquartered?
Well, basically, you know, people might think we go down there and we all watch all the drills that these guys do. Not the case anymore, which is kind of funny because they're opening up to some fans, I believe, this year.
Yeah.
Yet only a select amount of media are allowed to watch the drills in person, which is, I mean, you can say what you want about that. It's a little odd, but... Anyways, so we're in this auditorium of sorts, I guess, at the stadium, and they bring in all the prospects to tables, to podiums, and you know, dozens upon dozens upon dozens of reporters. We just, you know, talk to them, and you can kind of pick and choose who you want to talk to, and you kind of go from there, right? And also there's coaches and GMs, and every coach, every GM talks from every team off to the side as well. It's quite a production that lasts for a full week.
How many, like 600 credentials last year, or was it more than that?
I'm not sure. That seems about right.
I think it was about 600. I would describe that room not as an auditorium. I think it's like a private luxury entertainment area.
It's for
Colts, a premium seat holders during games, maybe. And they turn this into a glorified press interview area, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's on the east side of the stadium. And all the NFL people, they exit on the south and other ends. So unless they're requested to come in there, you don't really see a whole lot of NFL people unless you're around town. But in that work area, you're not going to see anybody.
Got to keep those dirty reporters away from them.
That's right. So that's the scene the way it is now. Now, should we discuss what the scene was like when this thing started here?
Yeah, take us back, Bob.
All right. They used to have this in Tampa, I believe. The first real combine was in Tampa, maybe, in the mid-80s, I think. I have no idea about if there was any media there. I doubt it. And then I know it moved to Indy in about 89, 90 at the RCA Dome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The first time I went was about 93. And I remember John Clayton, who at that point I think was in Tacoma still covering the Seahawks. John said, Bobby, he says, it's a great thing. You just got to show up, man. He said, just come on down there. He says, we got about five of us. So the first year I was there, I think there was about eight. And they,
John Clayton.
Rick Goslin of Dallas. Jeff Legwald, who at that point was in Tennessee. Jason Cole, who was covering the Dolphins at the time for Miami.
Now at Yahoo.
Yeah. Boy, a couple others, maybe 8 to 10. Jeff Hobson from Cincinnati, he'd probably drive over for a day or two.
Oh, good guy.
Yeah. So all the players were in the Crown Plaza at the old train depot. And the players would all be in this hotel, and we'd all hang around in the lobby of that hotel. Again, the drills were closed in the dome, but we'd hang out in this lobby. And that was the lobby in which everybody in the NFL, all the players, would walk by us to get through the lobby back to their rooms. All the team personnel, every coach, they all really walked through that lobby to go back into their interview area for these 15-minute interviews at night, you know. And then there was a whole bunch of agents. At this point, there was a lot more agents than press. There was probably 100 agents hanging around all week. So it was a melting pot in this lobby. You had the bellhops at the Crown Plaza trying to do their job, handle bags, but there was so much congestion in there, and it was it was a melting pot of players, agents, a few media guys, and coaches and GMs just hanging around, talking to anybody. It was just so low-key. I mean, you could do anything you wanted. One year, I mean, I think the Crown Plaza got mad when the media started picking up. Maybe by 96, maybe there was 20 guys in there, 25 perhaps. And one year, I mean, there was guys who would break out their computer and would just kind of sit in a corner and start typing stories. So it got to be kind of a little bit of a mess, a little bit of loitering. So one year they turned off the heat in the lobby. And it was probably, I don't know, it was a cold weekend, might have been 25. And the lobby inside was probably 40. Everybody was freezing. They're trying to freeze us out. It was a hilarious deal. I saw fights in there between agents.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Fisticuffs.
Yep, fisticuffs. One of the Rosenhouses and another guy from Florida.
No way. What happened?
Pushed a guy over at kind of a metal chain inside that lobby. We all saw this.
Was it Drew Rosenhaus?
I think it was Jason.
Okay.
The brother. But, yeah, it was. Those were great times. And then as the years went on and the press corps expanded and expanded and swelled, you know, to where it is today, 600, it's a credentialed event. You didn't need a credential. Yeah. Plus, there was a bunch of autograph people around, you know, and they'd come in that lobby. They'd stop players and head coaches. No big deal. Everybody, you know, had time for everybody at that point.
The NFL has grown, hasn't it?
It was the best, yeah. No, not so good.
Well, you know, at least the commissioner, a little underpaid, we learned this week, too.
How much was that salary at?
Oh, man, I don't know. What was it? I'd be lying. I think it's high 20s, right?
I believe it was like 29.6, according to, who reported that? Yahoo?
That's 29.6. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of money. Oh, boy. All right, so the combine has changed, but we're going to get down there. And, you know, it's really interesting to kind of just see the spectacle of, I think it was RG3 last year at the podium, and he just held court, man. You could tell he had the poise, the charisma. He had that it factor. I mean, there was just this huge, like, swarm of reporters around him, everybody reaching over each other, and one question after another, and he was just kind of, you know, charming, and you could just tell that this guy is going to be the face of a franchise. This year, you know, there isn't really a quarterback who's going to have that kind of appeal. But it's going to be interesting. Manti Te'o, this is the first time that he's really going to have a chance to answer questions from somebody that isn't, you know, Dr. Phil or Oprah, whoever the hell he's been talking to. So it's going to be interesting, Bob. Do you know what, by the way, do you know what a catfish is? Have you ever heard of a catfish?
I've seen that movie.
You saw the movie?
Yeah, I did.
Wow. All right. So what did you think?
It involved my homeland.
No way.
Michigan's UP. Remember the girl who was talking to the filmmaker was from Ishpeming, Michigan.
And you said, we don't have good-looking girls like that up there. That can't be true.
Who was head coach for 1 year of the Ishpeming Hematites? He's a coach who later won an NCAA title. And who's dominating my Michigan Wolverines? Mr. Tom Izzo.
Tom Izzo, your old buddy.
Yep. So, yeah, the catfish movie went to Ishpeming, and that's where it all kind of came loose.
Pretty fascinating. Yeah. I mean, I think when this Te'o stuff came out, I think I'm pretty hip and up with the times
and
Facebook and Twitter and all that, but I never really heard of that, of just fake accounts and players getting lured by girls that don't really exist. So you saw a catfish documentary, for people who haven't seen it, right? This guy, he kind of falls in love with this girl online who pretends to be this girl that's hotter than she really is, et cetera, et cetera. Manti Te'o says the same thing happened to him. Everybody knows his story. But there's a lot of layers to Te'o, where at some point he put the pieces together and at some point he perpetuated the storyline. I tell you, at the Senior Bowl, talking to some players about this, Vince Williams from Florida State particularly, was pretty pissed off about it. He did not like the fact that anybody would kind of play along with the cancer storyline. And I think the question that I posed to some players, including Denard Robinson, was, have you ever been seduced by a fake woman online? And, you know, they kind of looked at me like I had five heads, like, as big as catfishing may be in the world, it's so bizarre. It's the most bizarre storyline we've heard in a long time. And Te'o's going to talk about it, maybe, at the combine.
I mean, do you think he's going to have to talk about it with 20-plus teams
yeah.
for 15-minute shots? Is he going to come into that media room?
He has. I think so.
I don't think he has to.
He doesn't have to? I'm pretty sure he'll be...
He's not an NFL employee yet. They got no power over him.
Did anybody not talk last year? Any high-profile guys not talk? I can't think of any of them.
I'm not sure, but I think over the years there have been.
Interesting.
Again, I don't know. He may not. It's a hard situation, like you said, with maybe 200 people around you at your podium. It's a hard deal, hard way to control your message, unlike these TV hits.
You know, Green Bay's a team that might be looking at a linebacker this draft, obviously. And you know, talking to one GM at the Senior Bowl, the way he put it was, look, if Manti Te'o comes out and says, hey, you know, I screwed around and I effed up, those were the words he used. You know, here's what happened, is completely honest, and he doesn't really think that teams will hold it against him. More so, if he was this naive for this long, that is somewhat of a concern at that position, at a leadership position. So I'm not quite sure how teams are going to weigh this whole incident with him at the combine.
And between the lines, they got to get to this Alabama game. Mm-hmm. I saw enough of that tape, Tyler. He was terrible, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he was terrible. He just now I know his front line got battered pretty much by that Alabama O-line, which with a bunch of number one picks or future number one picks. But still, he missed a lot of plays. He was taking himself out when he wasn't missing. So that's going to be an issue. But that'll be a big thing from the combine, no doubt.
That's just weird, man. That is just weird. You're the big man on campus. What business do you have getting into? Get out of here, man. Manti Te'o. All right. What other players are going to be looking at in Indy?
Well, should we talk about some QBs? you got a series. Well, the big guy from North Carolina State, Mike Glennon. I don't know. He's kind of a statue.
Soft-spoken guy, too. Out of all the quarterbacks, kind of a soft-spoken guy. That might be a knock on him.
I wouldn't want to be taking one this year. Mm-hmm. I mean, all those guys last year look better than this bunch.
Boy, if you're the Chiefs, if you're the Bills, if you're the Cardinals, not a good year to have a top-10 pick when you need a quarterback.
So your buddy Doug Marrone, is he going to dip back into the orange stable of QBs with Mr. Ryan Nassib?
I don't know how much of a buddy he is, but I don't know. Maybe. You know, I don't think they'll go first round with him that high with that pick, but yeah, he's his guy. He's his quarterback. And, you know, it is interesting, though. I mean, everybody talks about their relationship, and obviously over 3 years together with him as the starter, they got close. But initially, that first year, Doug Marrone played Greg Paulus over Ryan Nassib. When it was clear that Nassib was better than Paulus, they just had Paulus in there to, you know, put cans in the seats. Nobody wanted to go to the games because they were terrible. And it was kind of a strange, you know, just an aside too. Greg Paulus went to high school in the Syracuse area, and there was one game where he was booed after another turnover. I believe Doug Marrone was almost on the verge of tears at his press conference that following Monday, and he got really worked up about it. But I digress.
So Paulus had played basketball at Duke. Mm-hmm. And then he went to Syracuse to play football?
Right, yep.
For 1 year.
For 1 year. Okay. He had 1 year to play. And it is pretty remarkable that a guy could be away from football for, what, four years? Mm-hmm. I mean, he was a top prospect in both sports at Christian Brothers Academy in Central New York.
Okay.
But away from the game 4 years, and he does start for a Big East team, and he had some highlights. You know, he won a few games for him, and he'd run around, and he'd make some plays, but overall, he just didn't have it. You know, it was...
Right.
A publicity stunt as much as anything.
Well, Tyler, you were down in Mobile. Should we talk about the Central Michigan tackle, Eric Fisher,
who right.
is going to be one of the top two or three tackles now in a fine tackle group. So what were your impressions of Fisher at left tackle?
Boy, he was the most dominant player in Mobile. You know, he took on a lot of top defensive ends and really made a name for himself. And I think that the kid out of Texas A&M, he could go first overall. He's probably the top tackle in the draft. But Fisher's surging and just catching up with his offensive line coach this week. Got the quote here. He said, I don't know how to say this because you have to write something, but basically he wants to kick your ass and he's going to figure out how. That's what he wants to do. He's going to beat you and he's going to find a way how. If you're moving your left toe a little bit, he's going to find a way. And, you know, a lot of people think, obviously at tackle, you have to have a little bit of finesse because you're going against speed rushers. But you do got to get nasty at that position, too. And you wrote about that a little bit in your season-end analysis there with the Packers.
Yeah. He's from Rochester, Michigan. I guess he was a real, one scout told me this week, he's a real tall, thin guy, and he went to the MAC, you know. Mm. I assume Michigan State didn't want him, and he's really up there. He's a top 15 for 15.
Right.
18. Yeah.
Top
20,
10, maybe.
Maybe.
There was one game for Central Michigan last year where they were just kind of running out the clock and, you know, getting first downs and melting it down, comfortable lead, and they scored. And Cummings, the offensive line coach, there said that Fisher was actually mad on the sideline, like visibly upset about it. And he asked, you know, why is he so upset? He goes, well, you know, he wanted to physically impose their will on that opponent the rest of the game, right to the very end. He does have a different temperament.
Hmm. Wow. So, okay. Anybody else you want that you're thinking
about?
What
about your Michigan guy, Denard Robinson? Not a good week for him in Mobile, but teams are going to be looking for these dynamic, do-it-all threats in light of Percy Harvin, Randall Cobb, Darren Sproles. Somebody's going to take a chance on this guy, right?
Yeah, but where, huh? Five, six?
You know, he can't really run routes that well. He's just not used to it. He started doing it toward the end of his career at Michigan in practice a little bit. But, you know, one scout was saying, why doesn't he just stick to running back? He's obviously undersized. But the way teams use running backs today in some type of role, that might be his future down the line. Who knows?
He's 5'10 and a half, 196 in Mobile. I saw him play in the Iowa game live on November 17th, and he played slot. He played some running back. That's when they first started moving him around, and Gardner played under center more. He was pretty good that day. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's some things you can do with him. My God, his open field ability is unsurpassed in this draft, I'm guessing, unless that – the wide receiver from West Virginia, right? That guy.
Wonder what kind of 40 time he's going to have. I mean, that's going to be pretty big for him in Indy. He's got to have a great 40.
What do you think he'll run? 4.46? I think he's fast.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's quick and fast. He played hurt in this game. He had elbow problems stemming from the season, from the bowl game. He played hurt. So, you know, yeah, he didn't catch the ball that well. He was body catching, but I think he's better than that with his hands.
I know a lot. You know, obviously, he was a big storyline in Mobile for how bad he played and, you know, how unnatural he looked at the wide receiver position. But he's also running a lot of routes. And I just think if he's going to project as a slot guy, I mean, he's not necessarily going to have to run a lot of downfield routes. And I don't think teams would use him in that sense. They'd probably use him in more, you know, get him the ball out in space and just kind of be creative with it anyways.
Yeah.
So maybe too much was made about his week at the Senior Bowl.
So slip screens, you're saying, mm-hmm. little turnaround stuff. Do you think he can be a return guy?
Boy, I tell you what, it did not look natural catching kicks and punts. Really? I know it's still new to him, and that's something you can probably learn, but we'll see.
Really? Yeah.
You know, anybody else you're going to be keeping an eye on down in Indy?
Nothing that really comes to mind.
All right, let's get to a few questions here on Twitter, okay. Bob. This one comes from Alex Talish, one of our friends there on Twitter. Alex says, Monte, probable, a chance, no way. Monte Ball, could he be a possibility for the Packers?
Oh, for the Packers?
They could go after a running back early. I mean, it's pretty early in the draft process. But look, they passed on Doug Martin a year ago for Nick Perry. If there's somebody they really like, maybe an Eddie Lacy, Monte Ball, some running back there could be a possibility at the end of the first round. No
Absolutely,
doubt.
Sure. Running back's on their list, and Ball's going to be among the top three or four. So, sure, they could think about him. He's there at two. They could think about him there as well.
This one from @BTGlory asks, what would you consider the Packers' biggest need heading into the offseason? Kind of a loaded question there.
Tyler, you take a shot at that one?
The biggest need? Boy, I just think you need you need another stud on defense somehow. I mean, maybe it's a player, you know, ascending on your own roster and taking a step forward. But right now, Clay Matthews is your one player that offensive coordinators have to account for every game. They don't have a lot of those players defensively. I don't think they're going to go out and sign somebody in free agency, maybe. But somehow, somebody has to take that next step defensively. You look at the Ravens and the 49ers, both of those defenses, they got playmakers all over the place. Green Bay, I mean, Charles Woodson, we talked about that for a while earlier. You lose him, you lose one of your best playmakers that you've had since 06. You lose Nick Collins. You need somebody to take that next step defensively. I don't know if that's really an offseason need, but that's what the Packers probably
need. They need big guys, I think, you know. O-line, D-line, a big outside backer, a good-sized running back, a good-sized safety who can run. They need size. They need power. They need meanness.
This one comes from Jonathan Judge. He asks, which player or players do you expect to make the biggest jump next year?
Want me to take a shot at it?
Take a stab at her, Bob.
I'll go to Jeremy Ross. I like the guy. I know he fumbled, and I know he dropped that whatever it was at Chicago. That was at Chicago. Cross field return. I like the guy. I think he's got power after the with the ball in his hands. I think he's going to become a good receiver. I like his attitude. I think he's smart.
That's a good one there. I'm going to go with Jerron McMillan. We talked about him a little earlier. I think he's got a lot of potential, and he could be the answer there at safety. Fourth rounder for Maine, and like you said, played 600 snaps, made some mistakes in coverage, but that's to be expected. But he's a headhunter back there. Okay. He could take a step forward.
Sounds good.
All right, and let's take one more here. This is from Randy Sen at Balding Pastor. Randy asks, is this a make-or-break year for Tremont Williams? Big cap number and so-so results the last two. We've talked about Tremont a lot on this podcast. I think sometimes he gets made out to be the whipping boy on this defense. They ask him to do a lot. Overall, a much better 2012 season than 2011. He was battling that shoulder injury all 2011. I know he had a few missed tackles here and there, but I just think that Tremont Williams is the least of Green Bay's problems on defense.
I gave him a B-. Not bad. Can he get back to that 2010 form? Maybe. But he was so darn good in 2010. Mm-hmm. God, I don't know. I know I gave him an A. I mean, he was just as good. He played that position as well as anybody in the league. I'm convinced of that. Make or break, I mean, I don't know. Usually you talk about guys age 25 with a question like that. He's 29 or 30. He's got, I mean, Woodson's gone. He's got to lead this group and play well.
I think that's going to do it for us, Bob. Thanks a lot for listening, everybody. We'll be back at some point. Not sure exactly when, but we'll do it. And we're going to be down in Indianapolis, so maybe we'll talk a little bit about some of the draft prospects next time. All right, guys. Thanks a lot for listening.
I appreciate it.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.